Hello and welcome to a very super duper special episode of the High and Low podcast. Normally a Kurosawa podcast. This time, wait. Hey, I'm not done with the intro. What's going on with this crows? Okay, never mind. Normally, of course, on a podcast, this time we're taking a complete left turn, right turn, and then a U-turn into the direction of something that doesn't fit in with the norm. A very special horror movie to Spencer and my heart. And we're joined by a couple of experts in the category, up-and-coming podcasters. You know, they're young upstarts, and we're happy to have them. Gina, Patrick, thank you for joining us. Kill by Kill podcast represent.
Thank you for referring to me as young.
Yeah, I really enjoy that. no one refers to me as young other than the other old people at Denny's.
I got a little, ooh, really? Okay, I can. I like that.
Compared to James Hong, we're all a little bit young.
Well, you know, in this movie, I really related to his horror at rapidly aging. I mean, there are some days where I too believe that my face looks like a rotting coconut, as his does in a few scenes. I spent a fair amount of time just kind of touching my face and shrieking in horror.
Yeah, this I have a theory in terms of this, and that he was at a party and his representation came to him and said, listen, James, you have an opportunity to make a movie. You can make any kind of movie you want, but I just want to let you know, people only see you in two ways, so you may have to pick a project that really focuses on both those things. One is people view you, and they love it, when you are a spirit trapped within an ancient flesh prison. And two, they love when you're a sex machine. And James goes, I gotta, this is perfect. It's something that is directly in both of those lanes, and somehow the vineyard came out of it.
Yeah, I too have a theory about the making of the vineyard, because this is directed and written by
produced
James Hong,
and stars.
I'm thinking that he when he was making Big Trouble in Little China, he's a reading of the script and he's like, you know, this movie's fine and all, but what it really needs is zombies and semi-nude women. and then he sat down and started writing a composition book.
I believe previous in the 70s he'd made a softcore movie.
He did, and it was the most unoriginal softcore title you can think of. It was called Teen Lust.
I can't imagine anything with James Hong containing teen and lust, and I just watched The Vineyard.
This movie, the first 5 minutes of this movie involves him getting a massage from a topless woman, so...
Mm-hmm.
He may have thought that this didn't say so much about him other than it was an opportunity for him to be a lead, but I think it unfortunately says a lot about how he thinks other people view him, or the other thing is that is hard to believe is that he thinks mechanics often do their most important Porsche repair work in a parking in the driveway in the middle of the night. And I just don't believe either are true.
James Hong is to chained up women what Quentin Tarantino is to feet. this is the thing. This is very much a thing. I got that real quick. And I'm not yucking Mr. Hong's yum. I'm just saying if he thought that, you know, this wouldn't come through, oh, it came through.
Yeah, the subtext is no longer sub. It's pure text.
Listen, both those... We're talking about The Vineyard and, obviously, Big Trouble in Little China. Those are both about older Asian men who are just looking for the right woman still. So I don't... You know, I'm not really reading into this sexuality thing here. He just wants to find a wife, right? Come on.
the right woman to in order to do some sort of convoluted spell or ritual that will give him eternal life or keep him young forever. I was not quite able to follow anything that happened in this movie.
Yeah, because the idea here is that he has that jade necklace, which at one point was the size of a tarot card and now seems to be the size of a guitar pick. But that has been keeping him, you know, young-ish for a while now.
It keeps his hair dark, but doesn't do much about his face.
Hey, listen, he's topless in this thing, and for his age, he's in great shape. I'm not going to take anything away from the man and his fitness acumen or how he presents himself on camera. He looks like a distinguished older gentleman.
Clean living.
Yes, but at a certain point, he cries out to the god demon that he has made this eternal bargain with, that there has to be some sort of 2.0 evolution to their relationship. The jade is going away, and you have to give me something else. And the solution is import a blonde and then .. $$$$. I don't know how it turns into profit. I don't know how it turns into eternal life, but it's an incomplete plan that this movie spends a lot of time fleshing out.
It feels like the movie Greed from the 20s, where there's like the original cut is 9 hours long, but that cut is lost. And I feel like The Vineyard has like a 2.5 hour cut that is gone forever.
Yeah, it shifts in tone roughly every 27 seconds or so.
Yeah.
It's a zombie movie. It's a wildly unsexy sex comedy. I mean, that whole scene with the party and the acupuncture needles, I was just like wincing, just like, please just let this scene end. Please just let this scene end. It's a romance. There's some Eastern religion stuff. There's some voodoo. I'm pretty sure in one scene there was literally a werewolf howling.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be out of place, to be honest with you. It keeps throwing things out. It's like, you want a little motel hell? Here's some buried people.
Yes, we make wine out of them.
And, you know, do you want, like, a crazy witch in the attic? We got one of those, kind of. You want, you know, James Hong's skull to pop out of his head? We'll do that like 3 or 4 times. You very much be satisfied.
Do you want some really ineffectual henchmen? We've got a bunch of those.
This is proof he should direct more and should never direct a movie again.
What is the benefit package that these henchmen get? Because
free
outside
wine,
of free groping chained women, which, you know, Let's just call that. I mean, I can't imagine that that's on their CV. So
that one guy had a kind of cool, like, single contact lens, like the villain in the Last Action Hero.
Yeah,
it could have been made of jade.
So, like, but he has, at one point I thought, okay, he's got two people, and then the third person showed up, and then by the end he has like 6 or 7. That's a lot of people on your payroll. I mean,
he's got one of the henchmen kind of has hair that makes him look like a member of the revolution.
Yeah. Hey, listen, I mean, when you think about it, if you're like the big boss of a evil situation, you know, not a corporation, obviously, he's just got the single vineyard and winery.
He owns the island, too.
And it makes sense.
Like, he's an evil Mr. Rourke, basically.
Yeah. It's
that place does not read like an island. An island typically has some sort of shore, typically around the entire perimeter of it.
It's a really big island, all right? Jeez.
He's been alive for a island. While. That interest builds up over time.
Oh, they show up on a boat, don't they, in the beginning?
You never really see beginning. Water. Briefly. I can't remember one moment where you actually saw water. I remember them walking out to the dock and then knifing that inappropriately German pimp.
Yeah.
From the bad guy convention that they go to earlier.
I'm so sorry that character just disappeared entirely about halfway through the movie.
You should have came back as a zombie, for God's sake.
He had a little bit of an Udo Kier thing going on, which I sort of feel like James Hong, wanted Udo Kier, and Udo Kier like hung up in the middle of their phone conversation when he's trying to explain the plot of the movie.
He couldn't afford him.
Yeah,
sure that by 1989, you just had to pay Udo Kier and frequent flyer miles and some Marlboro coupons
and poppers.
Yes.
James, I'm so tired of you calling me every hour of the night to tell me this story. I'm not going to be in your movie.
There's no way I'm going to be in the middle of the valley doing your movie. I couldn't be in Dusseldorf. I couldn't be in Berlin.
Wait, you said it was a soft core? Oh, just a beginning? Never mind.
Listen, if you're going to import some shirtless men, I'll consider it. But in the script, it says that the hottest guy there is wearing a dress, and I'm into it, but not on camera.
You kill that handsome hard body in the very beginning. That's all I needed.
I mean, where's more of this mechanic? I mean, where's his life like?
Yeah, what's his story?
Well, he lives with the his employer for some reason.
Naturally.
He has access to the grotto for sexy times.
Wait. Yeah. You guys don't live with your employers?
Technically, my wife might be my employer, but yeah. Nice. So I sleep with my employer.
I feel like I might as well sometimes. I think that my favorite part of that whole sequence is that the wife is very bad at having an affair. Like, I am pretty sure you're not supposed to be just standing there making eyes at your lover while your husband is standing right there, let alone just having sex with him in your backyard. I realize they're on an island and space is limited, but, you know, there are sheds you can hide in. They could go to the other end of the island, but no, she's literally in the backyard in full view of where he could see them.
And it's very well lit, strangely.
Oh yeah, it was very well lit. It was well lit enough that I was thinking, okay, how long is this scene gonna go and how graphic is this shit gonna get?
I didn't remember that. I have to say.
I looked and I'm like, this is not even 10 minutes in and wow, okay.
If you watch this movie and every time the scene changes, you ask yourself out loud, how long should this scene go? My guess is it will always go longer than what you thought it would go. James Hong has never seen a scene in which he thought, hey, we should cut this down. Every single line of dialogue, I'm pretty sure, goes more than one page and has a continued at the bottom.
Yep.
Yeah, it's and yet none of the scenes ever end in any sort of cohesive way, and often are in no way connected to the next scene.
No. Just a random visual collage of James Hong talking about rando Eastern mysticism, and then his son wearing the largest pair of glasses possible.
That's Michael Wong, not his son.
Oh, it's Michael Wong! My apologies, I misread the credits. Probably because they're Dayglo green on black.
And the auctioneer is Robert Ito, who is in Kung Fu movies, I think. I can't remember.
Yeah, Michael Wong, who the bulk of his dialogue is reserved for. Oh Jesus! Oh Jesus! Oh Jesus!
He's a very surprising character because, like, you can as soon as you see him, you're like, oh, there's another hard body, you know, like. This guy's wearing glasses, but he's going to take off his shirt, and some lady's going to be crazy about it. Except for when he goes to talk to Dr. Fo, and I apologize if this is offensive to anyone, but his voice is, I just wonder. I didn't know if he was putting on a voice or something like that.
He sounds like Jim Kelly.
Very interested in interviewing.
He is the least effective hero I have ever seen in any movie ever. I'm not sure how he didn't end up dismembered at any point during the movie. I mean, he cowers most of the time. It's kind of hilarious that he is set up to be the hero and he's like a human sack of flour.
I find it odd. I know the reason why they decided he is not allowed to drink. Because if he's allowed to consume the wine, then he instantly becomes part of the orgy party. And he has to be slightly outside of it to go, hey, this is weird. But it is also odd that the guy who doesn't drink is so interested in the winemaker. They just never find a way to make that reasonable for him to be so interested in everything. And then, on top of it, James Hong has decided to place books that give away his evil life and plan all around his house and then let the investigative journalist have free and unfettered access to it.
Maybe he's just bored at this point and wants to have some fun.
So let's get Spencer, do you have some nitty-gritty stuff prepared for this movie like we do for the normal stuff?
I can't find much about it at all. And Hong never really talks about it.
I cannot imagine why.
Yeah,
well, I saw a thing that said speculated that because he does kids movies like Kung Fu Panda in cartoons, he doesn't want to talk about a softcore horror movie.
When he sits up at the end of the movie and spits out what looks like a mouthful of cottage cheese and says, "Where's my amulet?" That's Academy real quality.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think Hamlet in Hamlet speaks as much as his character does in this movie. It's just monologues on monologues on monologues.
And Hamlet doesn't have to do anything involving a mouthful of cottage cheese.
Well, maybe not in any version you've seen, but...
And that is the main flaw with most of Shakespeare's plays.
And how many topless massages do you see in Hamlet?
Not one
topless massage.
Oh, my God.
King Lear gets close, but, you know, that whole thing gets broken up. So, you know, don't get to the good stuff. So, normally we try to go through the plot here, but I feel like if I do that, I'm just going to end up in like a mire, a swamp of some sort, and not be able to escape.
It's going to be the equivalent of a serial killer wall.
I mean, basically you have an eternal being who the only way he can live eternally is to constantly sacrifice young people in order to gain their life essence.
He drinks their blood?
Yeah.
Like a vampire?
But even that is like a little circumspect. Like, why does he only just drain the ladies? Why does he just kill some people? I find his methodology suspect. So anyways, he needs a constant supply of young people. So he employs a pseudo-German to recruit people at wine auctions. You know, the place you always find young people.
Yeah, you meet film producers there.
Is he putting blood in the wine?
Yeah, the wine is made from human blood.
So is it making other people younger? Is that why it's so...
I don't think he thought that much into it.
Because that would seem to be something that would be, you know, a matter of, you know, public record at some point.
I mean, he's a billionaire presumably, so I guess.
He's using the whole animal here, because he's using the dudes who he's burying in the vineyard who occasionally get up as sort of fertilizer for his grapes. Although we never see any actual grapes.
Right. There's no actual explanation as to what's going on there either.
Yeah.
He can control them, but sometimes his mother can. The witch in the attic can control them.
That's his mother. Yeah, don't call her a witch.
I was going to say, well, she had, like, dark magical powers. She could control the dead.
Yeah, I mean, well, she's not my mother. She's a witch in the attic.
She's a magician. Yeah.
But sometimes he could control them.
Yeah.
And sometimes he did voodoo. But sometimes he could move things. He could control people with his mind. And yet somehow he could not make himself, you know, stop his face from turning into the spoiled cabbage.
No.
And it seems to just happen randomly. Like, what is the turnover for him having to do this whole ritual? Like, is it every 3 days? Is it every week? Is it every month? This seems to posit, like most werewolf movies, that, you know, it's an eternal full moon out, and it's just weeks on end of people turning into hairy beasts. It's just every couple of days he goes, oh, oh, oh!
In this movie, it's every 4 hours, for God's sake. No wonder he's having an issue.
Can we talk about this this party scene? I got to talk about the party scene.
No, we're going to skip the party scene.
No!
It's boring. Who wants to
There's
talk
nothing
about
to talk
it's
about.
It's boring.
I mean, he just does a borderline offensive Chinese scream and dances around. Who cares?
I mean, it looks like the kind of parties you go to all the time. I don't...
I feel like Stanley Kubrick was sitting up late at night watching it and thought, huh, I think I just found my next movie idea. And you know what? It was about as erotic as Eyes Wide Shut. So good job, Stanley Kubrick, and good job, James Hong, for inspiring it.
Yeah, hey, don't spoil Eyes Wide Shut. I haven't seen it yet.
I'm spoiling it for you. It's not sexy.
No.
I mean, I didn't say it wasn't good. I said it's not sexy.
Didn't he die before it was finished?
Right after.
Oh, right after, okay. I thought he died mid-production.
Well, according to him, nothing was ever finished. I mean, he was known to re-edit The Shining all the time, just for fun.
Yeah, he took out the original ending 2 days after it premiered. You know the...
What?
You're talking about James Hong?
Of The Shining.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, where...
Yeah.
Where,
it's a hospital.
Where Ullman shows up at the end, yeah.
And he, like, burned that footage, and, like, it's gone forever.
James Hong was at the hospital re-editing The Shining.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
He's hanging out with Scatman Crothers.
You know, if there was a scene with James Hong just running around in the snow in a topiary maze, that I wouldn't have blinked an eye in this movie, because every fucking thing else happened in this movie.
His face crackling the whole time.
This movie's pretty great. It delivers what I want every movie have: a whole lot of James Hong,
a whole lot of women in shredded lingerie.
No. I'm more interested in James Hong.
That's why you didn't like Mother. No James Hong.
The only thing missing.
He's in so much stuff. He's usually like in 10 minutes. This like a whole movie, and I just love seeing him. He's a goddamn delight.
Okay, let's not go stray too far, because Gina really is itching to talk about this party scene. So lay it out for us, please.
Well... Another plot that basically goes nowhere. He either is or claims to be a film producer. This is how he gets young, supposedly attractive actors, although I found them pretty bland and boring overall.
Well, one was a high school graduate.
Oh, okay. I'm very sorry.
The one who dressed up, who was in drag, he's introduced as Brian. He's a high school diploma.
You know, one gentleman brought nothing but half shirts for this elegant island weekend getaway.
Not a complaint.
And then, of course, one of the people is James Hong's love interest,
Jezebel,
who is literally named Jezebel.
Jezebel Fairchild. That is a name someone wrote down and said, yeah. That's the name of the main woman in this movie.
I've seen
Jezebel Fairchild.
I've seen this five times, and I never noticed her name before. I thought they were saying Jessica the whole time before.
Jezebel. She gets off the boat and almost literally is making the fuck eyes at James Hong. It's hilarious.
I mean, Gina, won't you?
Well... I mean, you know.
Actually, James Kong? Maybe, or James Kong.
Hey,
oh, God.
Racist.
I would not have James Kong either, you know? I mean
if you caught your lover in bed with James, if you caught your lover in bed with James Hong, would you be that disappointed?
I'd be surprised.
I mean, it'd be an honor. Come on.
I guess. Sure, why not?
Joel?
Yes.
Would it be an honor if he caught Sarah with James Hong?
I mean, in the sense that I would appreciate the acting ability at the time, I suppose, but I would not be very happy now.
You guys are
now,
crazy.
If I caught her with Michael Fassbender, that's a whole different story.
Anyway,
this party.
This party. You know, this is, they have this this little soiree that starts with, again, I never thought I'd see James Hong get a topless massage. I never thought I'd see James Hong do some sort of interpretive dance. But that's what he's doing. He is just boogieing away with this mask on, and Jezebel is into it.
And he's doing this, like, crazy Bruce Lee scream that I won't do because that's probably racist if I did it.
Everyone is into it. It's so, like, stop it. What are you doing, old man?
Jezebel is, like he's just emanating, just blistering animal sexuality while doing this dance. She's just, like, practically just taking her dress off right there.
And you see Brian, the high school graduate, is wearing a dress and makeup for some reason.
Yeah, I won't speculate on what the German guy is wearing.
And the German guy is totally into Brian as a woman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, this is your costume? Oh, very interesting. Mm. Have you met my brother, Udo?
Now, are we taking bets as to whether or not that individual is actually German? Or just pretending to be German, because his accent is very inconsistent.
Well, he's barely in. He gets killed quickly.
Does he get killed? I mean, they just sort of lead him away, and then we never see him again.
He starts. The guard starts to choke him.
Yeah.
Oh well.
Down by the docks.
Oh, okay. Because so many characters just sort of disappear in this and
yeah,
you know, are never mentioned again that I wasn't really sure.
Yeah, he said, can I get a raise? And he said, yeah, he can get a raise. And then they kill him.
Yeah.
But where is he going to get his stock of new people? Like, as far as being a businessman is concerned, I find this plan to be, I don't know, not very well thought through. Like, are you just going to pick up some other German flesh purveyor at other wine auctions?
He might get a Czech one. He might get a Lithuanian. You never know.
This is an end game for him. He's found the wife that he's been waiting for in Jezebel there. And so he figures he doesn't need any of this other stuff anymore. So
a wife that he is immediately going to sacrifice, which... Is she your wife, or is she your sacrifice?
I mean, am I incorrect? What are you supposed to do with a wife? What's going on here?
Oh, wife you for Christ. I was trying to do a portmanteau of a wife and sacrifice, and it's not working.
No.
I'm going to play devil's advocate and say he has no end game. He just wants to have a little bit of fun because he's probably bored of being alive for so long.
I mean, he just got rid of a wife. Like, that just he had one. And then now she's down with the other torn camisoles in the basement.
Hey, there's one man down there, too.
And he does, to James Hong's credit, he does have a shredded tank top on.
Yeah.
So he does, speaking of his first wife, she gets the voodoo treatment like the other people he kills, right? But her voodoo treatment ends up being a giant, like, boa constrictor in the bed, which, if you look right before the scene ends, she turns over. That boa constrictor is trying to go up her butt. But I'm not sure how that equals death also.
Well, it's a metaphor because she is having an affair, and it's a huge snake.
Oh, he saw that that hard body's member, and he knew. Yeah. Okay, that's cool.
Yeah, do you get it?
after the extended kung fu fighting sequence between the his wife's lover and one of his henchmen, which leads to one of my favorite lines in the whole movie, which is the boss says you're getting some time off finally permanently. That's like my I hope that James Hong himself wrote that line, and I thought that he just leaned back, lit a smoke, and said, "Yep, I'm a genius."
You son of a bitch.
And then there's a great scene of castrate him, kill the eunuch.
Yeah.
It doesn't get any better than this. It's Miller time.
What I really love about that waking up in bed with a giant snake scene is that the actress then tries to portray terror while gripping the snake with her thighs in order to give it movement and make it seem more terrifying. But it really just looks like she's trying to hug that snake to death with her thighs, like that one villain in the Bond movie.
Oh, Xena on a top.
Yeah. Xena on a top.
Xena on a top. There you go.
Phoenix.
Simon Phoenix?
Are we just going to name all characters Famke Janssen played now? Or I only know. Oh, that's it. I don't know who she played in the
X-Men,
House of Lauderdale
remake. X-Men lady. With
I was just watching
hair.
Taken earlier. I just. No, we're not going to talk about that, are we? Because we can't talk about good movies or even not even just mediocre movies because we'll get away from this movie.
Okay.
Very easy to stray.
Would it surprise you to learn that that Jezebel is a Playboy playmate?
No.
Would it surprise you further to know that she used to be married to Chuck Lorre, the creator of The Big Bang Theory?
Bazinga. Chuck Lorre. Ew.
So yeah, she's probably they're divorced now. So, but she's probably just lighting cigars with $100 bills at this point. So
I'm sure she took care of the alimony.
Yeah. So don't feel sorry for her.
I mean, I did. She got the star of this movie.
Yeah, I kind of feel sorry for her on both counts. Because even if she wasn't asking for it, she still had to do this movie, and she still ended up marrying Chuck Lorre.
I think Chuck Lorre is a bit worse.
Oh,
she had to wake up.
I don't
next...
even know anymore.
She had to wake up next. Really...
Do you think that Chuck Lorre ever just sat up in the middle of the night with a mouthful of cottage cheese and said, "Where's my amulet?"
That's what he's doing right now, Gina.
He seems more like a "Where's my cake?" zombie. I'd have to say.
I mean, if anybody has a dungeon full of women in shredded lingerie, that would probably be Chuck Lorre.
And Steven Seagal.
Fuck you, I was going to say that.
Oh, the obvious joke. Let's see. So this party scene is also important because it introduces, like, about 17 new characters who just...
Yeah.
I don't remember any of their... They do... I actually thought the two of the characters were the same person.
Yeah.
The two brunettes?
Like, there's an actress... One of the actresses looks very much like Kristen Wiig, and it...
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's Nancy.
It threw me off. Yeah, and... Is that the one that had all the spiders come out of her face? I was like, well, that's...
No, that's Claudia.
Okay, because I thought that... Because when it was the next... I actually watched this in two parts, because it was just... It was just so much movie for me that I had to stop and take a break for a little while. And so when this other character appeared the next day, I was like, wait a minute, isn't that the lady with all the spiders that came out of her face? But they look so much alike and leave such a little impression. Which one was the one that kept hitting on Jezebel's boyfriend?
That's Nancy. Nancy Stone, played by Cheryl Madsen.
But she was not the one that had all the spiders come out of her face.
That's Claudia.
But they look exactly the same. Like, I can't tell the difference between them.
Yeah, I thought it was the same character the next day. I actually wrote in my notes, why is the spider lady still alive?
To drill down into the spider thing, when they're introduced to the spider derves during the party, the guy who wears half shirts and a dress
That's Brian.
Tries one... And says, no way, that tastes like spiders. Which tells me he knows the taste of spiders.
That's true.
So, where did he encounter spiders that you eat the first time?
Well, he's a high school graduate. Don't you eat spiders in high school?
He totally looks like the type of guy at a party whose gimmick is he will... eat anything you hand to him.
Yeah,
that's true. Eat this glue stick.
He's also the kind of guy you could easily trick into eating anything, too. Like, no, it's really good. Try it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, none of these characters in this movie are Rhodes scholars.
So Claudia, and what is the name of the person she's sharing the room with?
Spencer? That's Celeste.
Celeste.
Mm-hmm.
She's got like one of these hunks going all crazy for her.
That's Brad. And
he gets tossed out of the room. You know, all of a sudden
is that acupuncture needle guy?
Yeah, that's Brad.
Correct. Yeah. And
he keeps saying his name. It's never going to register for me who that person is.
No, I've already forgotten what the name of the woman with the spider coming out of her face were. The scene. I mean, I've been surprised that he would keep trying to hop into bed with her, because during that acupuncture scene, he had at least 3 orgasms.
Yeah, that scene was pretty sexual. Because when James Hong is starting to put the needles in, he said, is it in yet?
Hey, he talks a lot about worrying about if it's going to hurt, and you know.
You know, you remind me of a man who used to fix my car. Yeah. Anyways, Claudia and Celeste are, when he gets rejected, he comes back later to peek through their keyhole, and they are exercising in their underwear. Now, I just gotta ask.
Yeah.
Is this a normal thing? Do women do this? Because, I mean, I live with my girlfriend, but she has not done this yet. Should I be worried?
I mean, there is clothing designed specifically for exercising.
Uh-huh.
Most women own those items of clothing, and I gotta say, as many movies as I've seen in which women will just casually hang around each other in the skimpiest underwear possible, that's not something that I have seen borne out in real life. I'm sorry to disappoint anybody, but definitely the exercising in underwear or in tiny nightgowns, that's not something that I often see reflected in my own personal experience.
Mm. All right, adding that to the list of things to be disappointed in now that I'm an adult, what else? Patrick, you're very quiet. Are you remembering a situation where you actually saw this? Is that what's going on?
I think it's a stretch to call it exercising. What they're basically doing is limbering up in tandem, which is like they planned on, like their alarm went off and like, oh, time to stretch. And they just get right down to it.
It's like they know the guy is going to be peeping on them. So like, oh, let's give him a show.
Yeah, I think that someone just made a list for this movie of things that look sexy. and it's like topless.
James Hong did that.
topless massage, shredded lingerie, chicks chained to walls,
and one man
in a tiny, tiny little tank top, who kind of looks a little bit like he might be a foreigner roadie.
He made the list before he came up with a script for the movie, and someone's like, "Chicks chained to walls? It's a horror movie."
just build a script around this. Oh, wait, I want to get a scene of, you know, women just stretching in a somewhat sensual manner. Well, Mr. Hong, should we put, like, jogging pants or leotards? Nope, just keep them in the 90s, keep them in the lingerie. The audience will not question this.
Oh, that part's probably true.
The Grindbin podcast always will say, with, like, a really dumb comedy, that it's just a series of napkin jokes. And this movie feels like there's a series of random napkins of ideas.
Yes, that's very true. This is like the scene in which in This Is Spinal Tap, when he drew out the plans for Stonehenge on the napkin. He just, you know, James Hong was at some sort of cocktail party. He you know, ate some pizza rolls and grabbed a pen and wrote some things down on his soiled cocktail napkin. Handed to someone and said, make a movie of this. And that movie, my friends, was 1989's The Vineyard.
There is so much slow motion fighting in this. Everyone takes a breath count in between. It's like, punch, Okay. Kick! I'm ready. Gut punch with two hands.
Alright, okay, alright.
Kick! It makes the fight scenes in $6 Million Man look like fucking They Live. It's insane how slow all the fight scenes are.
Yeah, I have a little trouble believing that a billionaire movie producer /vintner, that these are the best he could do for henchmen.
I mean, at least he was thoughtful enough to hire a multicultural henchmen group. He's representing very well.
And he appreciated all body types and sizes.
That's true. That's a problem with this movie. It perpetrates the lie that fat people are actually very strong. as an overweight person, I can tell you, I could barely carry myself.
He just has a very different body type. But where his strength is that he's able to take a lot of punishment and keep going.
And until someone shoots a single arrow, yeah.
Well, listen, I'd like to see all of us come back from an arrow shot to just above your heart. It's more like a clavicle shot.
Good point.
I think my favorite part of all these fight scenes, though, is that the other hero, the blonde guy, I forget his name as well, he's fighting with one of the henchmen and just leans down and straight up snaps his neck with his bare hands.
Yeah.
It's like, did he drink some of... I feel like that they had no other reasonable way of ending this. Like, fuck it, just have him break his neck with his bare hands. Because that's something an ordinary person could do to another person.
And he suddenly finds a bow, but with no string. With two arrows.
And manages to make a functioning bow with a pull string from a light?
Yeah.
Yeah, that might be the most fantastical thing in this entire movie. And this movie also has ancient witches, zombies, and a crazy coconut head transformation.
Mm-hmm. Keep going back to that coconut. It sounds delicious. I don't know. Coconut
it's very
and tapioca
apt.
Pudding.
I think I one thing I noticed about each time he transforms, more fluids seem to ooze out of him.
Well, they're getting squeezed out because he's drying up
he's
like a grape.
That's one thing that wine is, it's fortified, so it adds that extra, flavor juices inside of his skull or something like that, I guess.
Oh, can we talk about the driver who looks like he should have been cast in Thundercats?
Oh, the guy with the the black eye ponytail.
Oh,
yeah, that was when I said he looks like a member of the Revolution.
Yeah, that's apt. He dons a mask during the party. Mm-hmm. Apparently because he could not watch it with a straight face. I assume that's...
I mean, who could? I mean...
And then he runs like he's in the middle of a jazz dance rehearsal. It's a lot of shuffle stepping.
The man obviously is a dancer. He's got a lot of grace to him. And he's, he's a very handsome man. So we don't want to work him too hard. That's why he's the driver.
Yeah. Oh, my God. His human resources department must be so taxed to try to keep all these people on your payroll. And what are their benefits? And, oh, my God, we lost another mechanic. Well, where else am I going to find someone who can repair a Porsche in the middle of the night in the driveway?
Get on LinkedIn. Keyword, hard body.
Yeah, ain't no monster.com that's gonna, do you have fighting skills? Are you willing to chain some people up in torn camisoles? Do you like women with open sores? Well, have we got the job for you.
Do you prove benefits? All the wine you could fucking drink.
You work in entertainment, correct?
Barely, but yes.
Have you ever been to a wine auction with film producers?
I have honestly been to events in which wine has been up for bid. Mm-hmm. But I've never seen a room with an amalgamation of people quite like that. Okay. I assume these are all the people that James sees when he goes in to audition for a villain role. Like, every single one of them, and he's like, Jerry! Phil! Marco!
I totally
forgot
about that opening auction scene. Oh my gosh.
It's incredible. Like, I barely could recover from it. Because he keeps showing more and more and more people, and you're like, well, what's that guy's story? Well, how did she end up with him? And everyone is paying way too much for a case of this wine, which I assume, once you have it, it makes you super randy, because that's what we see the effect of later on in the party scene.
We're going to have a party.
But I don't know how this is really going to help Miss Fairchild or her boyfriend's career.
Well, I don't know if they're that serious because they haven't had sex yet.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they're not.
Yeah, as her friend, air quotes, keeps pointing out. Do these people all know each other? Because I that's another thing that I'm unclear on. And I realize that everything else in this movie just, you know, checks out in every possible way. Are they all actors, or are they all friends? Or are they all actor friends?
They're kind of, I gather, they're actor friends. And one of them is a high school graduate they hang out with.
and are they ostensibly competing with each other for whatever roles he's casting them in?
I don't even get an explanation to what kind of movie it's supposed to be.
I think it's all a ruse.
Yeah, but does he? I mean, wouldn't the tabloids or something notice after a while that he's just constantly bringing attractive young actors to this island for prospective film roles, and then none of them ever make it back?
Yeah, again, that leads me to the idea that this is the end game. You know?
But for him to have gotten this far, and he's got an entire basement full of chained up, half-naked women, so this has happened before, and this has happened recently.
Yeah, and well, it's mentioned that in the 1800s, he went by Victor Poe, not Elson Poe. So if he gets too hot, then he just disappears and changes his name.
Yeah, no one will recognize another Asian man with the same last name who also makes wine. Come on.
And then the interminable scenes where he's talking to Jezebel. He starts going on about how, you've seen me in my dreams. And I mean, is that a line, or is she really that gullible, or did he know in advance that she was supposed to, you know, be the woman that he sacrifices? And I mean, I'm confusing myself just trying to figure this out.
I don't know. He has very vaguely defined powers, kind of like a Freddy Krueger. So the powers are like, I'm not sure what the limit of them are exactly, but it can kind of be anything.
I mean, it's all at the whims of the Mayan god who gets mentioned a couple of times, mostly in the beginning, the Mayan wind god who he speaks Chinese to in sometimes an unintelligible language.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of cherry picking for religious folklore here.
Yeah, I mean, that sort of figure looks like something he nabbed out of the tiki room at Disneyland.
Oh, the tiki room.
We swear, listeners, we are making a yeoman's effort at trying to explain the plot of this movie, and it's just, it keeps, the center does not hold. We cannot make heads or tails of it.
Once you think you know what's going to happen, it changes on a dime.
Yeah, there are constant tone shifts.
Yeah, there's a lot to talk about in this movie, but one of those things is not plot.
No.
What did you guys think about the flashback scenes?
unlike flashback scenes, generally, it added nothing to the plot, nor did it explain anything.
It explained that he is basically immortal. He briefly mentions that he
kind of got that. Except he's not, though. I mean, he's
a vampire. He needs blood to survive.
But it has to go through this crazy process where there's tubes and zap him things from the Dr. Frankenstein set. And
it's still blood, though, so he's a vampire.
Is that what makes you a vampire? Is just the consumption of blood and then everything else is up for grabs?
I was under the impression that this means you need blood, human blood, to survive.
No. But he also needs that jade thing. If he doesn't have the jade thing, he becomes a dried corn husk doll.
I don't know.
He's not a vampire. He's a wizard.
He's a Mayan ancient Chinese vampire.
And I'm not sure that flashback is evidence that he lived in any ancient time, because it's obviously just people cosplaying at a public park.
Yeah, there was a little bit of like, oh wait, is this supposed to be Japan? This looks a little Japanese here. But no, but it's a little bit of this, a little bit of that.
Well, so he name checks them.
It's a buffet of racial stereotypes.
Well, he name checks the Ming Dynasty.
Of course he does.
Yeah,
that's what everybody name checks when they're trying to sound mystical and Far Eastern.
Well, but he is Chinese, and so I feel like, you know.
He's from Minnesota.
But he grew up in China briefly.
He should and then they really know better.
Well, Joel, he is born in Minnesota. Then his parents felt he was too Americanized, so they moved back to China. And then once the revolution happened, you're like, oh, fuck, let's go back to Minnesota.
Mm. So that's what happened. And then he directed Teen Lust. And what is more American than that?
Then he was in a shit ton of movies forever.
Some of them legitimately good?
He'll do anything.
Yeah, and he's a guy that I'm excited when I see, like, his face in, like, a TV show or a movie. I'm like, hey, James Hong, good to see you. Stick around. We're gonna after the break, musical guest, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and James, if you're listening, I love you. I want to be your best friend.
I want to know what love is.
Just don't throw me into a vat and do something vague and mysterious involving winemaking.
Yeah, the discovery of that body in that vat is... They're trying to go for a... Like, if you want to see someone fail at a jump scare... that is a giant fucking fail of a jump scare.
You have someone leaning over,
and then a body just kind of, like, slowly comes to the surface. A giant overreaction. And... just instantly decides that person's dead. I don't have to help them at all. And runs in the opposite direction.
I was going to say, and our hero immediately shoves her back into the back.
Yeah. No one is fucking helpful. Up until the point where they start killing people Tomb Raider style, they fail at being a hero for a very, very long time.
Yeah, fifth viewing, it felt like I love this movie. It's my favorite bad movie. It's better than The Room and Birdemic and all that garbage. I'd rather watch James Hong be James Hong.
You'd rather watch James Hong work out some of his
I've never been able to sit through The Room in one sitting. I've never seen all of it. I get bored.
Perhaps if Tommy Wiseau had a scene where he had to talk through a mouthful of cottage cheese.
Yeah, well, James Hong is more interesting than Tommy whatever.
Well, this movie doesn't have any thrusting buttocks. So what if James Hong was, you know, just aiming it towards the camera? Come on.
Meh. Oh, yeah. But this feels like like a really bizarro episode of Kolchak to an extent. Where, like, Jeremy starts to investigate, like, the mystical, supernatural side of things, and then there's this weird, wacky villain. It feels like this Kolchak episode gone completely wrong.
It seems like several Kolchak episodes just sort of dropped into a food processor and then thrown at a wall.
Yes.
I'm like, yeah, like, hey, let's make Kolchak Asian and give him a shitty plot.
Now, are those glasses...
And surround him with naked chicks.
Are those glasses that he's wearing, or has he just cut off the bottom of mason jars and applied them to his face? Those are very large eyeglasses.
As I said, I thought this was a Clark Kent situation, and eventually he was going to be revealed to be, you know, some hairless, oiled up, muscle bound dude. But that just didn't come.
We never
pass.
See what that body do because he never takes off his, you know, sweater. Yes. So we just get to see him sweat.
He's always
as he runs in so many clothes while everyone else is barely wearing anything. He's dressed up for a very crisp autumn trail walk to see the leaves in New Hampshire.
Yeah, he's always ready for a class at Harvard.
I'm a very serious reporter, okay?
I sound like Jim Kelly, but I don't know Kung Fu.
I'm very interested in what makes a person like you very obsessed with wine. You seem obsessed with wine.
I was looking in your secret library of books, and I noticed that your necklace looks just like this thing. Are you an evil person?
Listen, I need to interrupt this conversation because this is very important. I was in your library again. Why do you keep letting this guy in your library? You got like 58 henchmen. Lock the fucking library if you're going to stock it full of your past crimes in a book called How I Killed a Bunch of People and Stayed Alive Forever.
Oh, dude, Jezebel's getting a little hot in here. Is it just me?
I mean, what is the love dynamic going on here between Big Glasses and Jezebel? And then Jezebel and the other guy who wants to have sex with her, is that's pretty much not going to happen. So that other girl's going to step up into it that looks like Spider-Girl. But Spider-Girl, like, why do you ruin Spider-Girl? Why throw spiders inside a Spider Girl? Why not put her up on in chains and make some wine out of her?
Isn't she the one in the vat though?
Yeah, she's in the vat.
Oh.
You put spiders in the vat too? Like, what is the winemaking process here, man?
You gotta spice it up.
the best that's what you get when you buy organic wine labels. You don't know what kind of dirt and
the spiders add a good
wildlife,
add a good bitter flavor.
Are you telling me you haven't picked up a bottle of Francis Ford Coppola's Best and just found a huge insect in there? Because that's happened to me several times.
I taste chocolate and plum flavors and spiders. Yes, spiders. It's on the back end. It's fruit forward, spiders on the finish.
That's that high school graduation paying off there, your education.
I mean, if you had tequila, you probably had a little scorpion or worm or whatever they stick in the bottom of the bottle.
You know, ever since watching Poltergeist 2, I cannot drink tequila.
Oh, first time I had tequila, I chugged like the last part of it, and I even like the bug part two.
Oh,
I regret it the next morning.
I would have regretted about 10 seconds later.
I regret hearing about it.
And everybody around me would have regretted it.
Well, I was 18 at the time, so.
I'm half Mexican, and I've never had an insect in my tequila, so what the hell are you guys talking about?
They put, like, a little scorpion in some brand.
You're talking about mezcal.
A worm.
I don't know. I forgot the brand. I was drunk at the time. I don't remember.
I think somebody played a trick on you. Probably James Hong.
Known tequila trickster James Hogg.
He brought you some of that earthworm tequila.
It's the good stuff.
Oh, Joel, James Hogg did a voice in the American recut of Godzilla.
You're talking about the first one?
Yeah, the original 50s one.
Oh, I actually haven't seen the American version.
I haven't either, but I know James
I've
Hogg
heard
does
that
it.
It's not as good.
No, yeah. It's just a lot of a footage of a white guy in an apartment going, "You won't believe what I'm seeing."
Oh man, that guy's our president. No, wait. Yeah,
isn't that character named Steve Martin?
Let's just talk about that. Okay, so somebody who normally listens to High and Low might be wondering why we covered a 1980s horror movie on a podcast when obviously our guests do a horror podcast thing. And Gina pointed this out, and the more I think about it, the more she's right. Even though this is a horror movie, and we definitely get some moments of gore, you know, somebody gets their head chopped off, there are very few actual, like, straight-up deaths in this movie. And that's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there are a couple scenes in which you think someone has been killed, and then they magically show up later, like the guy, the acupuncture needle guy, who I'm pretty sure that if you're, you know, if an artery in your neck just starts going, you're not going to be around to you know, fist fight with a henchman in a dungeon later. Of course, this is also the guy who ultimately gets his head cut off. But again, in the questionable editing and screenwriting abilities of everybody behind this movie, this character, up to a certain point, I assumed that he was dead, and here he is, he's still alive.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, other than the henchmen, who all just, they just kind of, they pass away in a way that I wouldn't mind going myself. Oh, I fell down a hill, you know. Arrow through the, like you said, through the chest there. Nothing too crazy. The gory parts are all just kind of just shock value, and then we move on. And, you know.
Yeah. I mean, are we to assume that that James Hong's character is mauled by the zombies, because he's looking all right by the end? I mean, his face is jacked up, but you know, he's his limbs appear to be intact. I thought we'd get a little bit of a Day of the Dead stitch going on, but no.
I have no idea what the ending really purports. Like, now mom's in charge, but he's still alive as a zombie. So is it a curse? Like, it's very unfinished. There's just a lot of ideas in it. All it adds up to is, like, James Hong loves to photograph women that are half naked and chained up. That's what it comes down to.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when you come away from this movie, you definitely know what James Hong's interests are. And those are Far Eastern folklore and ripe, luscious tits.
He's well rounded.
He's a Renaissance man.
Yeah, just another one of those napkins being put in the box.
Writing down ripe, luscious tits. and you know, Chinese homeopathy.
I mean, if I had to pick a death in this movie, it'd be a spider's. Because, one, it'd be notable. Well, and, two, it would be, I'd conquer my fear of spiders while getting killed.
See, I can't get behind that, because it was done a lot better than in the movie The Believers, which was it probably came out a year or two before this, so I'm assuming that he might have seen that and said, well, that's kind of cool, let me put that in my movie.
I know a spider wrangler, so I'll call him up. Yeah, all of this entire movie feels like favors he's accumulated over the years, and he cashed them all in at the same time and released it under the title The Vineyard.
Mm. Very true. I don't know if you guys stuck around for the credits.
No.
Okay,
no.
Because
there's only so many things you can ask me to do.
You know,
on
I
top
did.
Of there being a whole bunch of people being thanked, like Domino's Pizza and
wait a second,
sort of sausage maker. And
did you see who provided the boat?
Michael Jackson.
Michael fucking Jackson! Or is the boat named Michael Jackson?
It's a common name. Well, I don't know. He has connections. He knows people.
Yeah, I guarantee he was friends with him.
Sure.
Because why the fuck not?
I just wanted to point out that during the credits, there was a very nice song, actual song, being played that I can't remember a single thing about. But I was like, oh, I really enjoy it when crappy 80s movies put a song at the very end.
It's a lot of plot rock, yeah.
Mm-hmm. We just watched a movie called Desert Warrior for the sci-fi podcast we do, and that's got this doozy of a love ballad that, like, doesn't fit into the narrative at all. And that's I feel like I should start a collection of these movies now.
Yeah, they don't really do that anymore. Like, just a random song that goes with nothing that happens in the movie.
Yeah, I got to sign off. Gina, can you do the goodbyes for me?
I can.
Okay. Sorry, guys.
Thanks, right. Patrick.
Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, let's start wrapping it up anyways. But okay, Spencer, sell this movie. Because, like, I mean, I like this movie, too. But since it's your favorite, I just need you to really sell this here.
I can't. It's just, if you love James Hong, you'll love this.
I suppose. Who's it for?
It's only for James Hong lovers?
I don't know. I first heard about it on this podcast that's not around anymore called a Schlock Treatment. And they just talk so highly about it. Like, oh, I gotta see this movie. And to me, it lived up to the hype that they made it seem like. And I don't know. I just like how bizarre and nonsensical it is.
Yeah.
It's definitely nonsensical. I will give you that. You do not undersell that aspect of it.
And it's one of the few American horror movies directed by an Asian person and stars an Asian person, which I can't really think of many others at all.
No, and you make a good point there, and I'm reluctant to say that this movie is not good because of that reason, but it's... For someone who had been in the film industry as long as he had by that point, it is really incompetent in a lot of ways. The plotting is poorly done. I mean, I can't blame him for the editing. I don't think he had any, although he might have had some behind the scenes hand in the editing. But I think more than anything else, this movie suffers from just editing. The editing is done like somebody's hacking away at it with a pair of fabric scissors. Like, there are scenes that they just end and they don't have any connection to the next scene. There are, like, one example, the driver, he is clearly knocked out in one scene, and then the next time we see him, he is helping James Hong's character in this sacrifice at the end. And that's just, I mean, that kind of thing bothers me because it really sort of shows a lack of caring on the filmmaker's part. They will assume that the audience is not going to notice. And I've watched enough of these movies to know that kind of thing is actually very noticeable. if like a character, and this is why I had a problem with casting actors who very much looked like each other, in that it was disorienting, it didn't make any sense to how the plot was moving along. And again, did you pick actors that looked like each other, so much like each other on purpose? Or was this just, you know, something that you didn't put much thought into? Yeah,
like, I mean, who you found most attractive.
Oh, yeah. I mean, in a way, this is very much a vanity project for him. And I think he just, you know, he wanted, and again, I totally believe that this movie reflects his interests. And you know, I'm not judging him for that. I mean, most men do like women in shredded lingerie. You know, I mean, it's not particularly weird. It's just he just doesn't do a good job of making it seem like this isn't something that he is personally into. Listen, it's like Quentin Tarantino and Feet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or saying the N-word, yeah. Just like Quentin Tarantino and...
No, Tarantino doesn't use it that much.
I mean, he doesn't use it as much as my next-door neighbor, but no, I'm just kidding. Sorry, Scott, that's not true. this movie is kind of a unique thing in the way that it's all slammed together, and also in the sense that absolutely nothing about it is original. But I do think it's a spectacle that should be seen by people who can sit down and appreciate a crappy movie, even as like a novelty.
It would definitely do really well with a MST3K kind of treatment. There's just so much going on in the background and just these just bizarre little vignettes and scenes. It'd probably put it on like a party or something with the express purpose of people just riffing on it. It would be incredibly entertaining for that.
So
The Vineyard, 1989.
Yep. I own it on DVD. Paid $16. I'm gladly spent on it.
I paid $2.99 for it to watch it on Amazon. I feel that. I feel I got my money's worth, more or less.
Yeah, I shelled out the $6, so now I own it on Amazon, which means I don't really own it, and there's no evidence.
Well, a DVD has no features at all. It's just it's like a pan and scan VHS, I assume.
What? No storyboarding. No directors speaking over it and giving you little behind the scenes dirt on it.
You get trailers, or a trailer.
There's a 4 minute long trailer for it on YouTube.
Oh, the whole movie.
I was gonna say, I think even in 4 minutes you still can't encapsulate what this movie is about. I watched, even at the end of the movie, I'm still not entirely sure what this movie was about.
Yeah. So I hope this isn't the end of collaborations between our two podcasts, because I appreciate that the way this went, and it's nice to step out of the realm of just exclusively Japanese film every once in a while. I've said this to Gina before. Patrick's not here to listen to it. He had to step away. But I really enjoy Kill by Kill. So,
oh, thank you.
I'm looking forward to you guys sticking around for a long time.
I like the Happy Birthday to Me. That was called.
Yes, that was the one that was the episode that was featured on Podmas.
Yeah,
TV Club.
That I loved it, but I could not follow the plot. I lost track pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah, we lost track, too. It's fine. It's an incomprehensible movie.
All I know is I started eating shish kebab as a midnight snack.
Well, then we accomplished what we set out to do.
But once we got to that part, like, oh, I've seen that poster before.
Oh, yeah.
It's a legendary movie poster.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So, Gina, do you still want to do the house episode?
Yes.
Okay.
Plug Kill by Kill for us, please, Gina.
Okay, well, Patrick and I host the Kill by Kill podcast, in which we talk about horror movies according to the character deaths. We are currently in the... Oh, we're past the midway point in the Friday the 13th series. I don't know when is this going to be available, this episode? When is this episode going to be available?
Probably Halloween time.
Okay, so we'll be just getting into Friday the 13th Part 8, Jason Takes Manhattan. We just finished Part 7. And you can just look us up on Kill by Kill. We are on Instagram at Kill by Kill Podcast and on Twitter at Kill by Kill Pod. Although you'll be talking to Patrick there, not me, because I don't do Twitter.
Makes sense.
I cannot. I won't go there.
And I know you guys have a goal going on, right? I don't know if it's going to still be going by the time this is released, but you guys are trying to score on the iTunes chart. So seriously, listeners, go check out Kill by Kill, subscribe to their feed. Let's give these guys a hand, because they are amazing.
Yay, thank you.
Now, High and Low, you never need to listen to us again. This is the only one. I'm just kidding. Spencer, what do we normally do?
Usually we talk about either a Kurosawa movie or some other Japanese movie from, 50s, 60s, 70s, maybe, a couple of 90s here and there. But, just old Japanese movies, an excuse to watch them, talk about them. And me and Joel just did an episode on this weird movie called The Pornographers that's a really great fucked up family drama.
Yeah. It's as I said on Facebook, or was it on Twitter? Whatever, same thing. It's the one of the least sexy movies possible. It's the opposite of sexy, but it is kind of a masterpiece. There's a reason why it's part of the Criterion Collection. It's the plot is almost as detailed as The Vineyard, now that I think about it.
Yeah, but that plot...
Impossible.
That plot is purposely overly complex.
Right, and they actually made a really good movie.
Yeah.
And if you want to listen to more joking around with me, I do a podcast with my co-host Aaron and Sarah called Please Don't Send Me Into Outer Space. Each week we watch a different science fiction or fantasy movie, and those come out on Mondays. I've had Gina on the show. We did the Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me movie. And Spencer has been on a couple of times. What do you think your most notable one is?
Either Petey Wheatstraw or Mary Jane's Not a Virgin Anymore.
Yeah, Petey Wheatstraw is a spectacular movie that people should watch.
Hey, so. And so is Mary Jane's Not a Virgin Anymore.
That's more of a, depending on what kind of taste it is. Yes, and that was also a special summertime episode that doesn't usually fit into our thing. But good movies either way around. Pretty soon by the time this comes out, we've done Desert Warrior, which is a Lou Ferrigno movie that is, it's not good. It's not a good movie, but it's at least entertaining to watch. And we're going to be covering, I think it's our first Studio Ghibli movie. Ghibli?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be covering Spirited Away.
Oh, hey, we did a Studio Ghibli movie a while ago.
Yes, we did.
Only yesterday.
But there's no sci-fi or fantasy in that movie.
There's pineapples.
That's true. Yeah, so you can get all of that stuff, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, wherever they're calling it now, Stitcher, all the regular places.
Yeah, High and Low, they're on Twitter, High and Low Pod, email highandlowpod@gmail.com, Facebook, iTunes, podcast stuff.
Yeah, and hey, send us a message if you want to hear another collaboration between us and Kill by Kill, and give us a movie suggestion, because we're going to have to find something really good to bring this team together, because I think both Patrick and Gina are disgusted with Spencer now, and, you know, just some bad blood.
I've let Spencer stay at my home, and this is how he thanks me.
I made you peanut butter cookies.
You did. That's true. That's true. I could forgive you because of the cookies.
Yeah.
Peanut butter and spiders.
The show's email is highandlowpod@gmail.com. The show's Twitter is @highandlowpod. The show is available on the Google Play Store, Podiant, PODIANT, Podbean, as bean, not beam, and iTunes, and wherever you find your podcast. Thank you for listening. Get down! Woo! Baby! Play the board like a pro in a perfect ball. Get down, baby, to the funky, funky, funky groove. Get down, baby, let the light reflect upon your natural mood. One can never plan out the actual path of the mysterious need in a female's heart. Man can only follow, not knowing how. His faith might erupt.